from ComedyFilmNerds.com with Graham Elwood.
The Floating Force of Pandora, ever heard of it?
And Chris Mancini.
What clan are you from?
This is the Comedy Film Nerds Podcast.
It's not that great.
This is not the ninja movie I signed up for.
Cousin Eddie's package.
Why can't this happen?
Going on. This is episode 80, which we're very excited about. And as we said, we're going to vote on it, and you guys are going to get to vote. We're going to play more theme songs, and episode 100 will be the new theme song.
Yes. So. And you know what? We really want to get into this very briefly, is that we've got a tremendous response from the Stephanie Wilder Taylor episode. That was the episode 78.
Yeah.
And you guys were amazing with all of the extra information and opinions you guys gave us. This is what we love, when you guys really get engaged with the show. And just to recap some of the things that you guys have helped us out with and commented on, The Lion King. There's a great explanation on Facebook about the Japanese creators of...
from Big Fan Japan.
Yeah, from Big Fan Japan, about the creator of Kimba the White Lion. And when it came out in Japan, it was saying, oh, it was ripped off from there. And turns out the creator of Kimba the White Lion was influenced by Disney, so he felt bad about suing them from ripping him off. So the lawsuit never happened.
Only a Japanese
that was
person
very gracious.
Would be
yeah.
so gracious about that. Anyone else would be like, I'm going to sue these motherfuckers.
Yeah, the Disney lawyers better come out of their cellar, because I'm going to...
Wait, you're saying he was influenced by it, but then they stole it from him. So
he's influenced by earlier Disney.
By earlier Disney stuff, not The Lion King. So then he wrote this Simba the White Lion...
Kimba the White Lion.
And then when Lion King came out, many fans in Japan were like, this is a blatant ripoff. And the creator was like, well, I've been so influenced by other Disney stuff that I'm not going to sue.
Oh, I get it.
And his son actually said the same thing, too. He's like, well, my father wouldn't have wanted that, so I'm not going to
so
do it.
Honorable. That's
and
so
then,
great.
And then the other emails we're getting about Lion King is like, it ripped off Hamlet. It's the exact story of Hamlet that the Lion King ripped off Shakespeare.
Shakespeare is going to sue, though. Shakespeare is suing.
That so estate, that's in the works.
Isn't every story the same story, though, don't they? Did you ever read that book, The Writer's Journey?
If you go back far enough, everything is either Oedipus or...
Shakespeare.
Or some kind of mythology, you know.
That's
or
what it all is.
There's always a Kraken somewhere.
at least the Kraken.
The next thing is the movie that Stephanie was talking about that you couldn't think of, with Anthony Edwards and the Apocalypse, Miracle Mile.
Yeah, and a lot of people liked it.
Yeah, a lot of people really, really thought it was good.
so great.
Next, she was saying there is, she was like, if there was ever a Powerpuff Girl movie, I would see it. There is a Powerpuff Girl movie, and now she's going to rent it. Some people actually contacted her directly on Twitter to let her know that. Next thing, Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. Apparently an incredibly creepy and disturbing film.
I don't remember it being
I don't
that
remember
creepy.
That at all. I just remember the car turning into different things, but there's like, you know, this child catcher that captures kids and puts them in dungeons and disguises himself as ice cream truck vendors.
Is his last name Fritzel?
Yeah.
Fritzel the pedophile is on his flying car.
So now I have to re-rent this movie to see what the hell
this is
about. And lastly, fans not too happy with Graham's dismissal of Tree of Life.
I got to read this. First of all, I want to say this is how you write a I disagree email from Emily Gallardo. She goes, I can't tell you why, but the Tree of Life is a great movie. What I can tell you is why I liked it. I liked it because it dealt with the nature of faith and suffering. I liked that it was from the point of view of a child, and it was deeply personal. I'm not going to read the whole thing.
Is that a Terrence Malick film? Or
yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I saw Thin Red Line.
Yeah. That's what I was talking about on the show. Was I was like, Tree of Life was boring me to death.
So was Thin Red Line.
Yeah, Thin Red Line is like the most slow-paced World War II movie that you've ever watched.
It was like the worst paintball movie, like the worst paintball game ever. Just like just nobody, like, everybody was out of ammo.
Yeah, just hiding in their homemade deer blinds. But anyway, she goes on to say in a very articulate way how much the movie meant to her, that she saw the movie twice. And then she... She right here. I must confess that I've seen my fair share of art movies. I like watching movies at the Harvard Film Archive. Really, they show pretentious art movies there? And when they show a lot of foreign and experimental movies. And so anyway, Emily, and she goes, her last line was, "I was saddened by your dismissal of this movie, but I understand that I can't expect it to touch you the way it touched me. I just had to write you a note because this movie meant so much to me. I wanted to hear, wanted you to hear from a regular person who paid money to see it twice," she writes. "Anyway, I enjoy Comedy Film Nerds and wish you and Chris continued success." That's how you write a disagreement. Like, we've read many, like, "You guys' show sucks and fuck you." We've read plenty of those on this show.
And on iTunes.
But this is Emily. I totally understand what you're saying about how something resonates with you emotionally, then it has value. It just didn't with me, and we appreciate this email and all the emails. And
the message boards are going nuts,
The message boards are going nuts, too. Everyone responded to... there's been a crazy thread since the Matt Weinhold.
Yeah, about horror movies.
All the horror movies that we talked about in episode 79. So very much appreciate this, and thank you so much.
And you know, whenever you talk about horror movies, someone always mentions Killer Clowns from Outer Space.
Yeah.
That movie never dies. And it's by far not a great movie, but it's just that kind of weird 80s, that vibe of like horror, comedy, creepy, that just... Something about the movie. Every 10 years, it's someone else's favorite movie. They discover it.
There's also a great link that this girl, Ava from Charlotte, posted about this movie called Norwegian Ninjas.
Oh.
It looks amazing. Apparently, there was this actual guy that was tried by the Norwegian government for
being a ninja.
For being a ninja. He was an illegal ninja. No, he actually gave secrets to the Russians or something in 1984. And so this director made, like, what if he secretly had a ninja training camp? And the trailer makes it look like it's amazing. Like, it's so campy, but the filmmakers knew what they were doing.
I was in a movie once called...
Should we introduce our guest first?
I'm sorry. Wait a minute. We keep talking. Yeah. This is our guest. I was on his podcast, The Jim and Eddie Show.
Yeah, it's called Talking Shit.
Talking Shit.
Jim Jeffries and Eddie Ift. And
there he is, Eddie Ift, everybody.
Yes. Hi. I just had to interrupt. When you're talking about bad films, I did a film... this could be a whole podcast, and you guys, I'm going to have to get you a copy of it now. I did a film called The Ninja. There are guys in my high school who were like the nerds in my high school. They were older than me, and they beat me up once for stealing their beer. The nerds beat me up. That shows you where I was. For stealing their beer, which I never stole. Like, one of the football players stole it, and they thought it was me. I ended up becoming friends with them.
Or they just had to beat up somebody.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And they figured, let's beat up a kid 2 years younger than us, and it took five of them. They waited for me to get off the junior high school bus, and they beat the shit out of me when I got off. Everybody's like, there's guys waiting for you. And I walked off, and they beat the shit out of me. I ended up becoming friends with them because this is we're going way, way back now, like 20-some years. These guys had a camera, a beta camera. They were like the first to have it.
Nice.
And the one kid, his name's Scott Shepard, started making a film in his backyard called The Ninja. They are still making that film today. I'm not joking you. I have talked to Jimmy Kimmel about this. Jimmy Kimmel's wanted to produce it. Paul Provenza, who made The Aristocrats, wants to make it now. The guys started shooting 20-some years ago on Betacam, and now they're like really good filmmakers, but they cut in like – in a scene, there will be a scene from 20 years ago.
Like a flashback.
Yeah, well, like, you'll do over the shoulders, and in one scene, the guy will be talking, and then he cuts back, and he has a beard. And all their special effects are horrendous. Like,
we have to see this movie.
Like, they'll look over a bridge, and there will be a monster down there, and the monster will be, then they'll do just a close-up of, like, a crayfish in an aquarium. And they disembowel each other. They have...
But it's not done yet?
It's never done. It's never going to be done. It's a work in progress forever. They make the guys from American Movie look like Spielberg. But some of the stuff is really good. But it's called The Ninja, and I have it. And it was on cable access in Pittsburgh for years. I did
on different cuts.
Yeah, and I was a bounty hunter named Bang Bang Hiccup. And I could tell you hours and hours of stories of but they shot it in this guy's backyard, and now they've all gone on, like, they all have real jobs, and he'll call them. They're all spread out around the country. He's like, I need you in Pittsburgh next weekend. And they're like, you know, but I've got a wife and kids and a job.
Well,
and
he's like, Bang Bang Hiccup has to do some.
Yeah, we've got a scene to shoot. You remember that scene? And just unbelievable. And it started getting zombies in it and all special effects. And they do the special effects like in camera.
Sure.
Like when somebody punches, there's a guy beside the camera clapping. And they used to do in-camera edits. Like they would just rewind and then record again.
But on those old beta cameras, they weren't very precise. So you had to kind of get lucky if you want to do that.
That's awesome. Well, look for the star of the ninja. We have Bang Bang Hiccup here in the
ninja. The ninja. The ninja. Scott Shepard.
All right. What is there any other emails we need to read,
Chris? No, that was good.
We have one from Kevin Schnur that recommends, he goes, maybe realize we know very little about Chris and Graham and how they became comedy film nerds. There should be an episode where they get interviewed. So I think we might do that.
Yeah, we might have one of the interns just come in and interview us, and we'll have that little bonus episode.
Yeah, and maybe we'll have Bang Bang Hiccup there.
It'll be
awesome. Sitting next to a crayfish tank.
Yeah, clapping his hands when someone gets punched.
It'll be awesome. It'll be awesome. Well, let's get into it.
Yes, absolutely. Now, Paranormal Activity 3, none of us saw this movie.
None of us saw it. But,
I did see the first two, and what surprised me is how much money it actually made. 52.6 million.
Which is the biggest opening of a horror movie?
Oh, one of the biggest, or the biggest opening of a horror movie.
And isn't it made for like $8?
Oh, yeah. There's nobody. These are the cheapest movies ever to make. And it's one of those movies where you go, well, there's no way they can make a franchise out of this. Oh, okay. Oh,
turns out they can.
Yeah, turns out how about that?
What do they spend to make it? Do you guys know?
Well, the first one was made like next to nothing.
I'm sure the budget on this was probably
the budgets go up, but the production value does not. So that it's some producers are getting very rich.
And is it as bad as like the Blair Witch 2?
No, you know what? The problem with the second one is that the second one was pretty much the same movie again, and Blair Witch 2 was like just a mess. Paranormal Activity 3 is like a prequel. So with the kids, but I'm not, somebody put it on the message boards that they liked it, but we'll have somebody see it this week. So
I never saw the first two, but the trailer for this one, the third one, actually was the scariest trailer that I've seen.
Well, I think they spent a lot of time on the trailer, as they should, but the first one I liked. You saw the first one in a crowded movie theater, and you didn't really know what it was, you know, exactly what it was about. It was a fun experience.
The budget was $5 million.
Yeah, second one, terrible.
Is it a movie you should see in a movie theater, or is it one you should wait?
It's one of the, if you watch this, one of these movies in at your home, and you're like getting some snacks, and there's no way it's scary.
Oh,
it's like one
attention.
Of those things, it's like you can't, you got to have the full experience for these movies.
Because the way I saw Blair Witch was, I had a friend that worked at Miramax, and I think it was Shooting Gallery made it, I forget who made it, but she handed me a tape when Blair Witch came out.
That's how it got famous. Everyone has that story.
And she said, go watch this. These are these kids that went into the woods. They were like film students or something, and they made this film, and no one's seen them since. And there were no credits on it.
Sure.
Right.
So all I did was see it like this, and I went, and I was at home alone, and I was freaking out. out. I was like, I double locked the doors. I went over, I swear to God, I went to the doors and locked the doors. Yeah. And I was like, this is terrifying.
And it went through film festivals, and people made copies, and it was one of those things that just blew up. And that was how you watch that movie.
Paranormal's
the same way, just you watch it in a different way. But yeah, it was that exact same feel to it.
Well, they're going to keep making it. I mean, they made this movie for $5 million, and it made 50, you know, it's making upwards of 50,
yeah,
$55 million
as of today. It's the Shrek of horror.
It is the Shrek of horror movies. Donkey, you're possessed.
But that's, obviously there's going to be a fourth one.
Now let's talk about a movie that didn't have a good box office.
Oh, Three Musketeers, yes. Now, here's the interesting thing. When you see the trailer, you think that this movie's going to be really dumb. And sometimes you go to that movie and it surprises you that it's even dumber than you think it was going to be. This movie, let me start by saying this movie was horrible, but I was on board with the premise. I thought, really cool. Okay, let's modernize Three Musketeers a little bit, make it more stylized, more sword fights, give it like a steampunk kind of feel to it, airships and, you know, cool stuff blowing up, you know, spies, all that stuff. And okay.
So you thought it was going to be like the trailer said to you, like, oh, maybe some of the Sherlock Holmes
stuff? that's what I thought. Okay. Maybe like it'll be more Sherlock Holmesy. No, it wasn't. It was, and this is the director of the Resident Evil movies, Paul W.S. Anderson, which I don't hate. I mean, I like the last Resident Evil movie.
He made something else too, Paul Anderson.
But this movie was
Paul W.S. Anderson.
Oh, another Paul Anderson.
This
not the Magnolia.
This movie was so bad that they stopped making the candy bar.
my thing with this, like, when I saw the trailer, I was like, how many fucking times they're gonna make a Three Musketeer movie, and none of them are that great. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I remember seeing one when I was in the 70s. Yeah. It wasn't.
And this
it's like
one,
Robin Hood.
Yeah, exactly. Or Zorro. Yeah. They're gonna just keep making these fucking guys.
And this
guys.
One did so many things wrong. It did a couple things right. Like, it started, like, at least with the action, it wasn't those quick cuts where you don't see anything. You actually get to see the sword fighting. But, you know, you have, like, the director's wife, Mila Jovovich, and it's like completely shoehorned into this movie that, okay, well, there's no possible reason you're in this movie except that you're the wife of the director. You actually see that on screen. And then you go at one point, is that Orlando Bloom? And then you go, is he wearing like a pompadour? It's like this crazy, crazy haircut with him. That must have been the deal. Like, all right, we'll put you in another movie, but you got to wear this crazy wig. No one with a French accent.
Oh, good.
Everyone in France either has an English accent or an American accent.
Hello, I live in Paris all day.
Even then would have been better than what they did. It's like, well, you know what? We're not even going to try.
So is this worse than the Charlie Sheen, Keith or Sutherland one from 1993?
Ooh, that's a tough one.
That's a tough one. Yeah, that's a piece of shit. It's a raving piece
of
shit.
It's probably in the same level. But this one might be a little dumber.
You know what you're saying?
That was Young Guns with Swords.
Yeah, that's Young Guns with Swords. Yeah. And you're saying it's dumber than Young Guns with Swords.
Oh, yeah. You know what? I am saying that. And a couple really good actors in this movie, and pretty much nothing to do.
I kind of liked Young Guns.
Sure, Young Guns was a good movie.
Young Guns was fine. Why are they in swords and
but
fancy
when you
hats?
Make Young Guns, okay, well, Young Guns was a good movie. Let's ruin it. And, you know, let's make it something else.
Had the 1993 version of Three Musketeers been successful, they would have just been like, Young Guns in outer space. Yeah. Young Guns in a mine shaft. Young Guns on a pirate boat.
What fascinates me about this movie, too, is it's so unbelievable. And there's such those horrible, you know, action-y lines. You know, every cliched line that was in any action movie is in this movie. You know, you'll be able to get everything. But the best scene of the movie was the ending scene that was actually in the trailer. It's like, you know, the movie wraps up and then you can't just have a big budget movie like this. You have to set up a sequel, even if there's no point to it. And at the end, it's like the sky is filled with airships and you're on the brink of this giant war. I'm like, oh, that should have been the beginning of the movie. And then now you're going to submit me to a sequel that will probably never get made because this movie's not really doing that well. But, you know, make a fucking movie. Don't make the first part of some kind of weird franchise that's going to be a piece of shit. Just make a good movie. That's all you have to do.
Do you think they originally go into it like that? Like, we've got to make this so that there's going to be, you know, two other films out.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, absolutely.
You don't think it's at the very end? They're like, this looks so good. You know what? Let's change the ending so that we can leave it open.
No. I think they literally go in like franchise.
Yeah, they're like, this is going to be our Pirates of the Caribbean.
It's all that extra crazy CG that's completely unnecessary. And I had to see it in 3D, which got me even angrier because I have children. And when it comes to movie times, they're not as flexible for me. I have to pick when I am available and when the children are not available.
So I had
to see it in 3D because that was the only time available. And it got me even angrier.
Yeah, I can't stand 3D.
It's horrible.
It makes me sick.
And I will say,
motion sickness.
And here's a director that kind of understands it a little bit. Like, he understands that it doesn't have to be stuff coming at you. You can have those sweeping cityscapes and landscapes that look cool in depth. And there were a couple of those cool scenes. But, you know, a couple cool scenes does not a good movie make.
No, and it probably needs a stronger character like Bang Bang Hiccup.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Absolutely. I mean, available. If he was fighting ninjas on top of an airship.
I still have the bathing cap that I wore.
Oh, my favorite part of the airship fight, you know, you have basically airships, which are blimps. They're carrying, you know, ships with cannons on them.
Of course.
You're firing the cannons at each other. Well, why don't you fire at the giant balloon that's holding the ship airborne? Nope.
the fuck, man?
Never figure this
every
thing
20
out.
Years. They made one in the Richard Chamberlain one in the 70s, which I remember. It's 1973. Then the Young Guns get swords in 93. Then this one. Mm-hmm. So in 2032, we can expect another
jetpacks.
Young guns and jetpacks.
I'm able to have an imagination and be able to go with whatever they create, but it's the little things like that that upset me. Like when I watched Independence Day, mm-hmm. when Will Smith got into the alien ship and put on their seatbelts and they fit perfectly.
Yeah.
I was like, there it is. Now it's ruined the film.
Or they were using the same computer operating system where we could send a virus in.
Same software.
Like, yeah, oh, good. They were using Windows 3.1.
I know how to tap into this.
Yeah.
I used to be a hacker in college.
So I definitely know alien coding.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on.
Well, it took a little longer because they were using DOS.
It was a Radio Shack. Yeah. It was a Tandy. Margin Call, well, we've talked about this two episodes ago, right? There, we have
Yeah. Neil went to a press screening. There's this a review on the site, and he really liked it.
Cool. All right. I saw Martha, Marcy, May, Marlene. And this movie is a limited release, and it is really the trailer's very cool. It's a really interesting film. Basically, this girl, it starts out, she's in some sort of...
I assume this is a small art film.
Yeah, of course this is.
I can't see them doing
with
commercials
swords.
For this. Because every American can be like, I'm going to go see that
Marcy,
movie with like lots of names.
the girl movie.
You know, that one.
Manny.
No, I'm going to go.
Marcy and the Girls. That's the American title for this. Marcy and the Girls.
That's like throwing down the gauntlet when you make an independent movie. Fuck you. You can't even say it. Yeah.
For like 2 years, I couldn't say the name Before the Devil Knows You're Dead. Because I kept saying before you're dead, the devil knows you're dead. Devil dead. Before you're dead.
But at least that's a sentence.
Yeah, but
this is just a string of names put together.
All with M's.
There's no way I'd ever get this. I could, right now, I just looked at it on paper. You said it. If you said to me, what's the name of that movie? I'd go, it's Mary. Mary and a lot of other M.
Mary and the
women.
Mary and her friends?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why didn't they call it Mary and her friends?
The three Marys.
Yeah, four. No, there's four.
There's
Martha,
four.
Marcy, May, Marlene.
The Four Marys.
I would see a movie. It was called Four Marys.
Yeah, they're going to make it every 20 years with the Rat Pack. but here's the thing about this movie. It is very artsy. But I liked it. It's a very engrossing movie. It's about this girl who basically escapes from a cult, and she, you know, calls up her sister, and her sister's, you know, like, where have you been for the last 2 years? And she's just very vague, and she's kind of out of it. She's like, oh, I was with my boyfriend for 2 years living on a farm. And then she keeps flashing back to what happened at this cult on this farm. And it's really interesting the way they do it, because they do it sort of chronologically. Her first flashback is when she first gets there. And it's just this sort of like, oh, we're all hippies living on a farm in upstate New York, and everyone's just going to make their own food, and we're all working together. And like, oh yeah. And then you slowly see this shit that happens to her, and her behavior in present time is very weird and erratic, and you start to realize, you start to see why, because it was crazy evil shit was happening on
like it. Vaseline mice and shoving them up their ass, kind of weird.
Vaseline mice.
That happens at every cult.
That's a standard cult issue. Vaseline mice. That's the sequel to this movie. Is Vaseline?
That's
mice.
On the brochure.
And
Elizabeth Olsen is in this movie.
Yeah, she's one of the older. She's the star. So
how did she do?
She did great. I mean,
is she one of the twins.
Yeah, she sure.
She's
is.
One of the twins. She's like in her 20s now, and you never would have.
And a billionaire.
And a billionaire, and you never would know it. But she just does an excellent job. And then John Hawkes, who was in,
please tell me that the cult leader was what's his name from
John
Full
Stamos.
House.
Yeah, it was John Stamos was the cult leader.
How great would that be? Saget comes out with a poker.
Yeah,
Saget's the cult leader. Everyone has
Dave
sex.
Coulier.
Yeah, Dave Coulier. They're all the brilliant.
Alanis Morissette.
Yeah, it's crazy. She's still angry about it, writing songs. No, John Hawkes plays the cult leader and from Winter's Bone. He's an amazing actor.
And Deadwood.
Oh, and he's so great, dude. He plays this, you know, he starts out, the first time you meet him, there's this one flashback where she just gets to the farm. She's like, wow, I really love your house. And he goes, it's yours as much as it is mine. And you're like, oh, he's so... And then he just gets evil, man. He's so manipulative. He's a great character in this. And the end of the movie, you know, gets a little... I don't want to spoil anything, but it gets a little like... is this really happening, or is this happening? Is it in her head? But even if it is just happening in her head, I was like, well, if it did just happen in her head, she's really got traumatized by what happened. It's really interesting. And every time the movie started to get slow, and I was like, this movie needs to pick up the pace, she'd flashback to some crazy shit. Like, each flashback gets crazier.
Like, you were cueing it almost.
Yeah. It gets crazier and crazier. It's a really cool movie. I highly recommend
it. Has that director made anything else? Sean Durkin.
Let's look up Sean Durkin.
I feel like I know the name.
He has directed, he's produced a bunch of stuff. Sean Durkin, he hasn't done much. Director, Mary Last Scene. He's done two shorts. This is his directorial, his feature film debut. So
he's got Mary in another name?
Yeah, he's big fans of Mary. Doris and Mary. God, it's all girl names, which is...
What is the significance of Martha, Marcy, May, and Marlene in the movie?
It's the significance is those are all of her names, because everyone that comes to this cult,
you get a new name,
a new name. The guy does that, be like, hey, this is Eddie, and we're like, hey, you know, he'd be like, hey, Eric, and immediately he changes your name. Like,
oh, creepy.
It's all the cult stuff, and the subtle ways that they do it. Like, why would you want to talk to your family? They're just going to poison you with their crazy thinking.
Sounds like my managers.
Yeah. You need a better name. Yeah. You need to joke.
Eddie
it up.
Swift.
Eddie.
Yeah. Why would you talk to your family? Go to Tahoe this week. Do gigs for us. We need our 10%.
Oh, I used to have that manager. And then he did a Vaseline.
No, I mentioned that Vaseline mouse thing. A guy that I went to high school with was the guy arrested in the state of Washington for having the bestiality farm, and I was just reading all about it. And that was one of the things they found: mice without their tails, covered in Vaseline with strings around them. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. All right.
Was this on the set of Ninja?
No. No. This kid was friends with the guys that made the Ninja, though. This guy was also arrested for bringing $150 million worth of cocaine over the border from Canada to
America.
Where
the fuck did you go to high school?
I know. This guy has been in the news since I graduated.
Columbia?
No, I went to yeah. Fox Chapel High School in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and this guy has been in the news since then. He was an internet millionaire. He started an internet site, made millions of dollars, lost it all. You know, it was like one of those paper millionaires when the internet boom. Then he got arrested. He was one of those base jumpers. He would jump off buildings with a parachute and got arrested for that. Then we didn't hear from him for a while. And then all of a sudden he was front page news that he was arrested coming over some trail from Canada to Washington, where it's like really hard to like hike this trail. And the FBI or DEA caught him with a street value of like $150 million worth of cocaine. He turns state's evidence on the guys that he's working for. He gets 3 years in prison, but every article is going, he's going to die in prison. You know, he's dead. Don't hear from him for a while. And then all of a sudden, boom, I don't know, it was like a year or two ago, there was a big bust in the state of Washington. It involved that movie. Was the movie Zoo? Do you know the movie? It was the New York Times reviewed it. It was a documentary film on these like people that went and have sex with animals.
Oh, yeah.
And they made a documentary film about it. And one of the guys was killed, like getting like rammed in the ass by his colon burst or something from a horse fucking him. Well, boom. Then the news, the police go and arrest because there's all these like animal cruelty, all these like dead animals on this farm. And who's the owner? The guy I went to high school with.
So much for witness relocation.
Yeah. I mean, like, you'd think after the cocaine bust, you might calm down a little bit.
You might keep a lower profile.
I think you just keep switching things, you know, like, yeah, now I'm just going to like have people, I'm going to let British tourists come to America and fuck horses on my farm.
Now I'm really into cloning. I really got into cloning.
Mouse is too small.
Now this guy needs to have a goddamn movie made after him.
Well, a friend of mine from high school said, hey, you've got connections, everything. You write film. Why don't you write a film about him? And I went, because I've seen what he can do. The guy's like an expert on the internet. I go, I don't want to fuck with. This guy apparently is not in jail, and he's already had $150 million worth of cocaine, and he can fuck horses without anybody stopping him. I don't want to mess with this guy at all. To me, this guy is just no longer in my world. In fact, I don't even like talking about him right now. That's why I'm not even going to say his name.
His name is Bang Bang Hiccup.
His name is Paul W.S. Anderson. Yeah.
Now, Eddie, you have your own podcast, and also we want to talk about, you did a documentary called America the Punchline.
Yes, I tried to get into the world of film. It's not easy.
First, talk about your podcast, because some of your fans might be listening to the show, but many might not.
Yes, you were a big hit on our show.
Yes, that was a blast.
Graham was great on our show. We do a show called Talking Shit, which is the worst thing we ever did was name it that, because we've been kicked off iTunes three times. First, for just putting it Talking Shit. Then so we had to change it to Talking SH*T.
Right.
Then we didn't mark it explicit, so they kicked us off for that, so we put explicit. Then in one of our show titles, the episode was called I'm Gonna Eat This Dude's Cunt. it was about our friend of ours had sex with a post-op transsexual.
And you typed that into the title.
It was in the title, so then they kicked us off for that. So then recently we got in a fight with the Apple Sisters. Have you ever heard that podcast?
Mm-mm.
Yeah, they're three girls that sing like Broadway show tunes. And Jim, my partner, decided to go to war with a podcast. He's like, this will be fun. We'll create a podcast war. And he's like, we'll go against
Twitter not good enough anymore?
Yeah.
You got to do podcast.
So we just randomly picked a podcast. We didn't even know what they do. And it was these three like innocent girls called the Apple Sisters. And they're on the Scott Aukerman used bang, you know, comedy bang bang, yeah, whatever, yeah. On their Earwolf. Like network, Earwolf. And Jim just started going, listen, you cunts, we're coming after you. You're horrible. And he told all our listeners to attack them.
Oh, no.
And it was awful, like, because they were just total. And they said it was funny at first. The Apple Sisters, like, it was funny at first. But when our review on iTunes went from 5 stars to 1 star.
Yeah, that messes with your.
Yeah.
Messes with your rankings and everything else.
And it was terrible. The next thing we know, Apple starts contacting us, sending us messages going, we're kicking you off again. And we're like, why now? And they're like, you can't even censor your name. Like, you can't put the asterisks. And I wrote back to them. I go, Ben Folds 5 has, you know, Bitches Ain't Shit. There's a show, Shit My Dad Says. Mm-hmm. All that you feature on Apple. Why the witch hunt? Why are you coming after us? And they're like, we do whatever we want to do, basically.
Yeah,
and Apple,
sure.
When they write to you, they don't even put last names. It'll be like David from podcast.
Oh, yeah. Google does the same thing. Yeah. Well, here's the deal. But wait, what about – no, here's the deal.
Yeah. I wrote back. I was like – and I had this really good letter that I sent to our lawyer first too. And I said, I don't understand why we are being singled out. And they said, we can do whatever we want to do. That was the email I got back. Like fuck off.
Yeah, there doesn't have to be a reason.
Yeah, wow. Like, fuck you. So I changed the name from Talking SH*T to Talking's Hit.
From the hit podcast, Talking's Hit. Eddie
with
Ift.
Your host, Michael Hunt.
I mean, like,
and Heywood Jablomi, yes. The co-host.
What? How ridiculous! So that's now how it is, and I do it with the Jim Jefferies, and we do it. I live in a house in Venice. Jim Jefferies is another comedian from Australia, moved to America. Said he was going to come for a couple weeks. Said, "Can I stay with you?" Hasn't left yet. It's been 3 years. He has ruined my house. He has trashed it. He's a disgusting human being. I never thought I was going to have to wear or use toilet paper on my own toilet seat, but I do. I have to put. I lay down toilet paper on my own toilet seat because of him. Even after the cleaning ladies are there.
He's got a huge following, right?
He's massive. And
didn't he just do like the Nokia Center or something?
He's doing I'm opening for him at Nokia on the 18th of November.
Wow.
And we did it last year too. And we ended up after the show, NBC called us in and they're like, you two are a sitcom. We're gonna make a show about you two. And then we sat around pitching with them, and they're like, and then Jim gets raped, and they're like, whoa, we don't know if this is for. And then the girl takes the ball gag out, and they're like, whoa, no, you guys aren't NBC. So then they moved
go
us.
To FX.
Yeah, well, now. Yeah. Jim now has a pilot in development with FX. Jim does. I'm auditioning to play myself. Yeah, I don't know how that happened.
We're just going in a different direction. Yeah. You just don't fit the Eddie Ift.
Yeah.
Thank you, CAA.
You think you're the only Eddie Ift? That gives that Eddie Ift feeling?
Yeah, no, the character's called Steve now. it's no longer Eddie in the
Steve Ift, though.
Yeah. Steve Ift.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
So, yeah, so we do the show from what we call the Rape Cottage.
Yep, I remember that.
The house is called the Rape Cottage because April makes
specifically,
it.
Why do you remember that, the name of it?
Well, I'm actually going to make a movie called Graham Gary Grant.
Gary Glenn Ross.
Geraldo, and it's about my flashback of the Eddie Ift and Jim Jeffries cult. I don't like, if I see mice, I scream, yeah. I cry. I don't like Vaseline anywhere near me. I don't know why. I just, that's a dark, I forget the whole episode. But anyway, it was fun. Yeah, it's a good
then
show.
You woke up and there's cocaine everywhere.
That was the first day when Jim moved in, where I came downstairs and there was cocaine all over the house. And I was like, this can't happen. This, and he's like, I had a party. I don't know. And I'm like, you got to clean up after the party. You can't just, like, people walk in, the landlord comes in. He's like, oh, yeah, she might take some of my coke. And I'm like, no.
And then that's when you go, yes, that could happen. That could, so you should clean it up. Yeah, you don't want anyone to take it.
We're around you, like 80 episodes or so.
Nice.
And it's every day I don't know what's going to happen. Like Andy Dick comes over and then does it. 3 days later he's in my house going, I masturbated in your bed. And I'm like, I got to move.
And you know he's not kidding.
No, I know he wasn't kidding.
It's dead serious.
Yeah. It's been a really crazy. We did a podcast last night and every time we're going there, I'm afraid. Like I stay at my girlfriend's now and I go to the house, to the Rape Cottage. The guest we had on, Matt Devlin, is a really funny comic. Uh-huh. We like find comics that aren't – I don't even like having big name comics. Mm-hmm. I like finding the guys that are like weird, interesting characters. But I look over at Matt Devlin halfway through the show and he's got a knife out, like a buck knife. And he's just holding it and I just went –
honestly, your show really should just be called The Comedy Condo, because that's like when you were first started on the road and you had to stay in a condo and there was like, I can tell you stories of guys that were just like, one time there was this old road guy and we come home, we did two shows and we went out drinking, we come back to the condo at like 2 a.m, he's just in his underwear on this filthy couch in Milwaukee and he's just like, he just looks and goes, he goes, women you can't trust, money you can't trust. Drugs you can trust. And I was like a 22-year-old, you know, brand new road comic. And I just looked at my buddy and we were like, okay, well, here's where I don't want to be 20 years from now.
Yeah. And where
or
is
here's
that
where
guy
I don't want to be right guy, now.
That guy's probably dead.
Yeah.
Now tell
or
us
he's
about
doing
your,
blow with Jim. Anyway, yeah. Tell us about
your documentary, America the Punchline.
I was one of the few comics that like I used to tour. I had a development deal and all this shit, and it all fell through, and I just freaked out. And then when I did the Montreal Comedy Festival, a British agent said, "Hey, do you want to work in England?" And I was like, I had a show with Warner Brothers at the time, and I was on an F. Sold a show to FX and had a show on VH1, like and a pilot with Comedy Central. All four of those things going at one time. I was like the fucking male version of Whitney. And and I'm sitting there like, he goes, do you want to come to England? And I was like, fuck off. You know, like I – and then within like – I'm not kidding you. It happened in like 6 weeks. They canceled everything.
Welcome to show business.
And I
– Well, that British agent made a few phone calls.
Yeah. I smoke a little pot and I'm starting to get so paranoid that I was going – this is like a plan. Like they're shooting a reality show about me that I don't know about. Like this was all a setup. Like everybody's laughing right now. And I went, I got to get the fuck out of here. I called the British agent. I'm like, hey, remember when you said I could come to England? I'm taking you up on that. And I moved to England. I just got the fuck out of America and went over and started.
When was this?
Like about 2001.
Uh-huh.
And I started touring in England. And over there, your agent just calls you and goes, hey, you're booked for the next 6 months. And you're going here, and you're like, I don't need to call club owners and kiss people's asses and call. And they're like, no, just go. Here's your schedule, and you'll get paid every night at the end of the night. And it was fucking awesome. Oh, and I started touring around England, and I didn't realize this, but like the comedy clubs in England turn into nightclubs afterwards. Mm. Like as soon as it's over, they move the chairs, disco ball comes up, music comes up, and you're getting blowjobs in the green room every night. By like three girls at one time. There was one time I had three girls and I said I felt like the mama bird feeding the babies the worm. And I was like, are you kidding me? This never happened in America. And I was like, I'm
well, it did, but it's an old road comic. He has to take out his teeth. It's a really different experience. He's got a knife.
So I'm touring over there, and after I got like, you know, sick of all the partying and everything after a while, I started to realize.
How long did that take?
About 8 years.
Yeah.
That's it. 10 years of this, I'm done.
I just booked another trip over. Yeah. No, after a while, I started every green room I'd go into. And they once you when you do the UK tour, they send you – you also do South Africa and Spain and France and Germany. And you go to Hong Kong a lot and Dubai. And you do all these – like wherever there's expats, British expats, you go there and you go do gigs there. Well, about like halfway into my thing, I started to realize everywhere I went – and this was at the height of the war – every single comic would be like, oh, where are you from? And it'd be like, America. Let me tell you about your country.
Yeah, Bush in the
war. And everybody just started – and I used to have a joke about it. They always wanted to argue. They're like, yo, you Americans, you got us all into this war. And you American, it's your fault, this war. And I'm like, oh, yeah, it was me. You know, I forgot I did that right after my Sudoku. Yeah, like I forgot I have a fucking phone that I call Bush. And I'm like, hey, shock and awe. Let's get this shit done. Like, and I just got so sick of everybody giving me shit that I started like being a student of it. So I could go in the green room and it became not comedy. It was like, here we were debating like American foreign policy and America in general. And I was like this, you know, the person, the representative of America. Because I'd go on stage a lot and they'd go, next comedian coming to the stage is an American. Boo. Just booed off stage. And I was like, you're booing me. You haven't even seen my stuff. Wait till you see what I got. You know, like, save your boos. And so I started going around interviewing all these comics, and I would try to find out their perspective on America. And basically the premise was that America was this punchline. I kept seeing America in all the jokes. You know, they were like, the end of the joke was, must have been an American. You know, the whole crowd, woo! Mm-hmm. And so I was like, why is America the punchline of every joke? And I started interviewing comics, and these are all friends of mine now, but it's funny.
Mostly British comics.
No, all over the world.
Oh, right.
And the thing is, at the time, they were all like my level, and now they're like massive, like Russell Brand and Rhys Darby and Jim Jefferies and Russell Peters and all these guys that are massive, massive acts that at the time were just circuit comics.
Right.
And so I made the film, and it cost me about $350,000 to make. Mm-hmm. And because I took a film crew all over the world. Wow. I mean, we'd be in the Middle East. We'd be in Hong Kong.
So that was a bulk of the budget was the travel cost.
Travel was really expensive. And then editing was expensive because we had 400 hours of film.
Yeah. Wow.
And we switched. We went through three editors because of the process. And I was dealing with guys that were really, really good intentions.
Sure.
But inexperienced green producers who would piecemeal me the money. I'd go, I need to pay everyone. Well, here's a couple $1,000s. And I'm like, no. I need to, you know, we need to buy flights. We need to do this. Right. We need to get going, or we need to edit this. And they're like, well, here's another couple thousand. Here's a couple. And you can't make a film like that. It's just too, and it drew out the process really long. Somehow in the mix, Paul Provenza, who made The Aristocrats, comes on board to co-produce. Mm-hmm. Paul recuts the whole film. We show it to the head of Sundance, who calls us and says, this is like genius, but it's not ready. You need to work on it. It needs a lot of work. So we send it to Tribeca. We get a call back from Tribeca, and they're like, half the people here love it. The other half hate it. And they're like, we're not – like, you need to work on it. So the producer got really kind of like fucked off by this whole thing and just went, it's done. It's over. I'm shutting it down. And we're like, you've spent $350,000 and you're going to shut it down? And he's like, I'm not spending another dime on it. And I was like, well, this thing needs – it's almost a finished product. And so
it's – that's not when you shut it down. Yeah, you shut it down before you get footage.
Yeah. But then I met with some people who worked for all these – and they're like, this was never a – this was never a movie house theater. It was never supposed to go to theaters. This was a DVD or a home – and so you were going the wrong route anyway. But it was just, you know, I think my producer thought he was sitting on like an Academy Award winning film. Yeah. And the second it didn't hit that, because his experience, he comes from a world of like success, you know, a lot of money. And when it didn't get that immediately, he was like, that's it. I'm done. And so there is talk now. It's been like 5 years since I shot the thing. There's talk now of actually some guys want to put it together and fix it and put it out there on Netflix or something.
And actually edit it together.
Yeah, it's a finished film right now.
What is it, 90
minutes?
But
the problem is it's very Bush heavy. And if we took out, I mean, you could just replace it with Obama.
Yeah.
You know, like if I went out and did like 10 more interviews and then cut them in. It's about a about 80 minutes. It started out, it was 2.5 hours. And the guy, the original editor, is now the executive producer of Ice Loves Coco. And he's a great, great editor, though. He did The Osbournes. He worked with Jeff Stilson. Mm-hmm. He did Chris Rock's hair, good hair.
Mm-hmm.
And Chris Rock saw my film or saw what they had done and said, let's hire
How does he want to change it and get it ready?
He doesn't. A couple other people have seen it and said, let's just take out the George Bush stuff and put in – because all the other stuff holds. It was like there wasn't just we hate George Bush. You know, we hate your leaders. There was you push your exports on us. You know, like every – you know, from Levi's to Coca-Cola, you spread your foreign policy is not great in any way. You use a quarter of the world's natural resources, and you're a fraction of the population. You are when you come to a country, you're loud, you're arrogant, you're rude. Your obesity, is ridiculous. So like you're the fattest nation in the world. We can make fun of everybody makes fun of fat people. So whenever you're in another country and they see fat people coming, they're like, hey, look, it's the Americans. And the thing was,
or the Osbournes,
yeah. The way we were trying to do it, it was like a spoonful of sugar, trying to help the medicine go down. We were trying to say, hey, America, you know, look at the way you're perceived around the world. Maybe we should clean up our act. Maybe we're not number one. Like, and they talked about that, the arrogance.
But it's not like an American Haiti movie or anything.
No, it's balanced because in the beginning it comes off as though it's very like American bashing, and even people would probably be like, "I'm going to kill Eddie Eft when I see him." I'd be like the next Michael Moore getting stabbed with a pencil. And then you start to see that like every country's got assholes, you know, people are people in general, and you see that, and it's just the whole film was about like people don't know people well enough. And Americans don't travel well. You know, there's only like 17% of Americans have passports.
Yeah. So that's kind of what ties it together.
And of that 17%, how many of them actually use them?
Yeah. So, I should have put it out there because I spent so much fucking money. But
well, what? Give us some, Eddie, some of your movies that you've really enjoyed, some classic films. Like, what do you gravitate to? Like, what would you recommend?
Gymkhana.
We've talked about that movie at length.
Is maybe the worst kung fu movie ever made.
Worst film ever. Of all time.
He's in the prison, and Kurt Thomas, the Olympic gymnast, and then there's a pommel horse in the middle of the insane asylum. Then he just happens to be a pommel horse that he swings around, and kicks ass on.
It's therapeutic.
That's the only way he can fight people is with a pommel horse. That's practical.
You want to fight me? Wait, get my rings in here.
I'm going to make these bars uneven, and then you and I are going to settle some shit. That movie is amazing. It's probably that movie, and the movie poster is the thrill of gymnastics with the kill of karate.
And you know what? We've probably sent
really,
I'm not making that up.
That's
we've probably sent so many people to actually see that movie after talking about it on the podcast.
That film has to every podcast I go on, I talk about this film.
It's the best movie. It's like it's so you could just see the executives. Boy, Kurt Thomas just won a gold. Let's get him fighting. Like what?
We got to get him in something.
Yeah, in martial arts. Like oh my god,
it was like
Chuck
rad.
Norris. Is too expensive.
Do you remember Rad, the BMX film?
Yes. Oh,
and they're like, BMX is popular. Let's make
it. Or Gleaming the Cube was Gleaming the skateboard movie.
I think I auditioned for Gleaming the Cube. I think I did. I can't remember if that's the one. And I think Tom Green got my part or something.
Oh, yeah. Outstanding.
Well, what about a movie that you really like some classic movie? Because you watch movies. I mean, you're on the road.
Weirdly, my favorite film of all time, Rocky.
Yeah,
that's not that weird.
Yeah, I mean, but I think it's kind of cliche. I think a lot of people have that especially a comic. I think it's a comics film because you put just the guy that's just been shit on his whole life, and all of a sudden he gets his shot.
Yeah, honestly, those scenes where in the beginning of the movie where he's like, hook him into my locker, and Mick's like, you're a bum. It's like every shitty comedy club we've ever been to where they're like, sorry, kid, drinks are full price.
Yeah.
But I've been performing here forever.
You get one ticket.
Yeah, you get one drink ticket. 10% off chicken wings.
Yeah, thanks, Comedy Catch in Chattanooga. thanks for driving me to radio in your Porsche and then telling me you couldn't give me a bonus.
Oh, yeah. You were four shy of a sellout, kid. No bonus. What? What did I?
Do you know the story about Rocky and Chris Rock and all that? Chris Rock, I watched his, it was like on Bigger and Blacker, I think, on the extras. He mentioned that before he shot his his film or his special, and he felt like he only had one chance because he had kind of mm-hmm. Saturday Night Live went and ran its course, and then he got a couple movies and they didn't make it, and he felt like he had his chance and it was gone. And then he got this HBO special, and he was about to shoot it, and he ran into Dice Clay in the street one day, and Dice said, "Oh, you're shooting your special." And he said, "Yeah." He goes, "Watch Rocky right before you do it." And he was like, "Huh?" He's like, "Just do it. Trust me. You got to watch Rocky." And Chris Rock said he watched it, and he like went out on stage like he was fucking going to fight. You know,
that
like,
is down the- awesome.
So then Chris told that to Jeff Ross. Jeff Ross told it to somebody else. And then I did it. I watched it before I shot my Comedy Central special. And you go out on stage like you have to win the fight. Like, yeah. You're like, fucking, I am going to take down this crowd.
Because you're future like- brother-in-law threw your future wife's turkey out in the street. That's why. So you better be funny.
You're a bum.
You're a bum.
I ain't no bum.
You're a bum.
You're a bum.
It's a living.
It's a waste of life.
I mentioned the other film I really like, Before the Devil Knows You're Dead. Mm-hmm. I really like mm-hmm. that film. And didn't he just die? The director, who was that?
The Devil Knows You're Dead.
It wasn't Sidney Pollack. It was it did Sidney Pollack just die?
Yes.
I think it was Sidney Pollack. No, it wasn't Sidney Pollack. I forget who it was.
We're going to look that up. Keep talking.
The All reason right. I like that film, I like a film with very high stakes, where you're put in a position that you're just like fucked and you can't, like you feel for the person.
Oh, it was Sidney Lumet. Yeah, Sidney Lumet directed it. Yeah, mm-hmm. He died a couple months ago. And God, he was an amazing director.
Yeah, so I really like that.
Did he do Network?
Oh, yeah, he did Network.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, he did Dog Day Afternoon. He did, it's...
And this was like his first foray into shooting with like the DV cameras mm-hmm. and multiple cameras and... it was just everybody in it was good.
Philip Seymour Hoffman, Ethan Hawke, and Albert Finney. God, and Marissa Tomei. Ah, man, that's a
great. Have you guys seen it?
Yeah, yeah, it's a really good movie.
Excellent movie. That's a really solid movie.
Ethan Hawke really. You just when he grabs onto a role and really gets into it, he's amazing to watch.
And he's also one of those guys. Like when he was younger, he was always in a lot of these movies where it's just like Ethan Hawke, and now like because of Training Day. This, you're just like. He's you know, he's got some chops. Like he's been.
He's even interesting in like, you know, movies that aren't that great, like Daybreakers.
That movie wasn't great, but he was definitely interesting in that.
Oh,
movie.
I wanted to bring up because you guys probably have seen it, I'm sure. Red State. I just watched it.
Uh-huh.
And I hate Kevin Smith films. I just have never ever enjoyed any of them, and I don't know if. You know, people are probably going to come after me for this, you know, because he's got that fanatical fan base and they all listen to podcasts. And I liked Red State a lot.
Yeah.
And I don't know why. I didn't like Clerks. I didn't like Dogma.
It was an anti-Kevin Smith film. He made kind of like an, you know, all the stuff that he just wanted to do something different. I mean, I didn't like it for more technical reasons. Like there were no protagonists. Every scene was kind of random and went on too long. And it
there
didn't
was,
really have
there
a cohesive
was some,
story.
There was some too long. It was too long, especially in We Got It, you know, about the cult leader.
Okay, we know what you're trying to say. Okay, now we know what you're trying to say in this scene. Now we know what you're trying to say in this scene, and it keeps going. But I didn't hate it the way other people have been like, oh, man, I hated that movie.
I actually liked it, and I'll tell you, weirdly, I probably liked it because I watched it in Kansas City. I was had been just watching the documentary on the Westboro Baptist Church, and I drove to Topeka to find their house.
Wow.
Just out of like...
So you couldn't have been in a better state of mind to see that movie.
Exactly. And
literally, physically, mentally.
Yeah. And I like... Well,
it's like robbing a bank and then watching Bonnie and Clyde.
Well,
always rob a bank before you watch that movie.
Yeah. It's like watching Blair Witch on a camping trip. I don't know why I really liked it, but I guess because I was into the whole cult thing at the time, watching all this shit about it. But there was something about it that I found real, and Ralph Garman in it. Do you know Ralph from Kevin and Bean? All of a sudden when Ralph came up, I was like, fucking Ralph? Ralph is like the cult leader. How cool is this shit?
That's excellent casting. Well, all right, let's move it on to...
Yeah, we've got DVDs. Captain America, The First Avenger.
Like I said, when the movie came out, it was a lot of fun.
I like this movie, too. It was way better than I thought it would be.
I just saw it again
I think
on
it hit
plane,
the right notes.
And it's this would be a fun DVD. I'd like to see what the
it's a Jim Jefferies favorite.
It is.
Jim Jefferies loved it. And don't they, in like three countries, they don't call it Captain America?
Yeah, they call it
the First Avenger.
They call it the First Avenger.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because they won't take it.
But he's dressed like the American flag, so I'm not really sure how much he can hide that.
That's always been his name.
I really like the three countries that chose to not use the name. It was like South Korea was one of the countries. It's like, we've been fucking helping you.
Yeah, without us, you guys would be done. Yeah. You would be...
Fine. Captain America's not coming to save your country.
You'd be Kim Jong-il's backyard.
Good luck when Magneto comes calling.
Magneto. And then Attack the Block, which is an excellent movie. If you haven't seen this, get the DVD. It's a very fun movie.
What's Attack the Block?
Susie Nakamura loved this movie.
Who made that, Chris?
This was the guys from Shaun of the Dead.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And it was really, I haven't seen it yet, but I've heard great things where it's really fun, good characters, and some good scares in it, too.
Yeah, and the lead character, this young kid, is really solid actor.
Shaun of the Dead, that's the redheaded guy that...
Simon Pegg.
Yeah. Simon Pegg. What was the cop film he did?
Hot Fuzz.
Yes.
Yeah, that was a funny film.
Yeah, it's that same. If you like those movies, you'll like Attack the
Block. My favorite part of that movie, the Hot Fuzz, was at the beginning when... they brought him into the office and they kept bringing in like superiors to explain where he was going, and it was all famous British comedians. It was like Steve Coogan, and then somebody else comes in like, oh, well, let me get my boss to talk.
Pearl Jam 20.
Yes, you saw this.
I saw this documentary. If you're a fan of Pearl Jam, you'll love it. Cameron Crowe directed it. It's awesome. And it's a lot of...
But if you're a fan of Nickelback...
If you're a fan of Nickelback, you won't like... If you're stupid, then you like shitty music.
I gotta go see this.
Yeah, you'll love it, dude. Cameron Crowe's an excellent filmmaker. So even if you're not the biggest Pearl Jam fan in the world...
And Cameron Crowe's a massive music fan. Wasn't she the lead singer of Heart or something?
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He's a huge...
The Blonde, I believe.
He's a huge music fan, so obviously he has a real feel for this, and he took a lot of their home video footage, and there's great footage, like them
trying to be ninjas.
Well,
opening up for Bang Bang Hiccup. Yeah. It's amazing stuff.
Eddie Vedder's a pretty private guy.
And they get these interviews in their homes. Cameron Crowe goes into their homes today, like modern, and gets these great interviews. And you get Eddie Vedder one-on-one talking about, you know, back then and when they started. And it's really stuff that, like, you know, I was a teenager and shit when they blew up, and so it really resonated with me. And then you're watching Eddie Vedder talk about it, what happened back then, and how he used to climb on the stage, and then the fact that I never really took this into consideration, but they blew up. They never were like driving around America in a van.
Yeah,
they were like the what was it, Mother Love Bone.
They went from MC to headliner.
Yeah, yeah, they did. They really did.
they never
did the
middled.
Mark Maron style.
They were Dane Cook.
Yeah, because the guys from Mother Love Bone, when the lead singer died, and they talk about that, and then they find Eddie, and then they just start, and they just blew up.
I read an interview with Eddie Vedder one time. He is really good friends with Kelly Slater, the pro surfer. They're like when Kelly's around, they bring Kelly up on stage and he plays guitar with them.
Then Eddie
goes surfing with Kelly all the time.
Of course.
And they interviewed them in, I forget what magazine it was. It was like GQ or something. And they said, who has the better life? One's pro surfer, traveling all over the world, and one's rock star. And Eddie Vedder said, let me answer that question. He goes, Kelly's life is better because he doesn't have to go to Pittsburgh and Dayton. Both of which I'm going to this month.
Go to Eddie F's website. He's got some upcoming tour dates. No, I mean, honestly, where pro surfers don't go to some shitty town. It's like Tahiti.
Well, there has
Australia.
To be war. There has to be water.
Yeah, there's no water in goddamn Oklahoma City.
They have the best life in the world.
Of course they do. It's amazing. I remember one time I was working in, I was in Hawaii. I ran the marathon there. And then the day after we went to the North Shore, it was in December, for the Pipeline Masters. And I'm watching these guys, and as we leave, I say really loudly, man, these guys must have such a hard time meeting girls. Because it's just like, there's just hot chicks in bikini.
Everywhere.
They walk out of the water all wet in amazing shape. They just tore up some fucking 20-foot wave. I'm like, this is a... And like, you know, Hurley and Billabong all own these mansions right on the North Shore. And that's where you want to spend your winters. Yeah. Surfing the best waves in the world.
I'm buddies with a couple of the guys on the Pro Tour right now, and just from living in Australia and getting to know them, a guy named Bede Durbidge, and I've met Taj Bro, I've met Kelly before, and they have the only bad thing about their life is the amount of travel.
Sure.
Like they're on airplanes. It's not like we have to get on a 2-hour flight to Texas.
It's 17 hours.
Yeah. They're on like 18, you know, with layovers and then getting on puddle jumpers to go to these weird little locations.
Well, yeah.
And then to live on a boat for 2 weeks while they're waiting for the swell to come in.
Oh, because it's like, they check some swell predictor and it's like, holy shit, we need to be in Sri Lanka tomorrow.
Yeah.
You know, like the swell's coming.
And then I'm like, so you guys need to listen to podcasts.
We have an iPhone app, Kelly Slater.
So coming out this week, Puss in Boots, you know, couldn't make enough Shrek movies. Now we got to do spinoffs.
Let's do it.
I may have to see this movie because I have children, but I would not,
not
go
me.
Willingly.
You're going to see. Yes. You will see this movie, father.
And Zach is in it. You got to support Zach. Zach. He doesn't have enough money yet.
I know. He's having a tough time. He's just struggling.
Does anybody know what character he plays?
Puss.
Yeah.
That's Antonio Banderas.
In time, I want to see this time travel or time life.
It's not exactly time travel.
It's not time travel, but you're assigned a certain amount of time, and that's your life. And and you know what? I'm a Justin Timberlake fan.
Really?
I am. He can act. He doesn't take himself too seriously. I got sold on him in that Raw Dog movie. What was that?
The Palm Springs film.
Yeah, Palm Springs. That was based on a true story.
Alpha Dog.
Yeah, I like that film too.
Yeah.
He was great in it.
Yeah, I did like the film.
And when you see him on Saturday Night Live and stuff, he's got such a great sense of humor about himself.
Who directed Alpha Dog? Was that the chick that shot, let me say what she directed. Not Fast Times at Ridgemont High. She did, what's her name? She was an SNL director. She was an SNL writer. I'm wrong.
Yes. It was Nick Cassavetes.
Oh, Nick Cassavetes.
So close.
Who's the chick
but
I'm thinking of?
She is great. Nick Cassavetes is a beautiful woman.
Who's the girl I'm thinking of that was an SNL writer years and years and years ago?
Nora Ephron?
No.
All right, let's move it on. If it pops into your head, let us.
Now, this one, next one I'm excited about is Rum Diary with Johnny Depp.
Yeah, this looks great.
You know, I wanted to see another Hunter S. Thompson movie, and who better to play him?
I think, I'm excited. It looks good, and this is right in Johnny Depp's wheelhouse. And
is it? Yeah. I heard Johnny Depp said that he wasn't doing any films that his kids couldn't see. I can't wait till they see.
Yeah, that's that's generally a soundbite that has no relevance in the real world.
Until, like, someone's like, when Oscar an offer comes potential. In. Yeah.
Is this supposed to be? I know one of the producers of this film.
Yeah, it definitely.
And he's rich.
Really? That's weird. Yeah, I'm excited to see that. And then Anonymous? I don't know much about this movie.
It looks ridiculous. It's, you know, this is, if you watch the trailer, you're like, gee, oh my God. Now, there is some controversy about whether or not William Shakespeare wrote all of his own stuff, but do you really need Roland Emmerich to walk you through it?
Roland Emmerich, Jesus.
Yeah. And if you watch, there's a trailer online, and he goes through the reasons of why Shakespeare, he didn't write any of his movies. It's this weird, crazy European accent. And it's unbelievable. And as he's talking, you're like, you're the dumbest man on the planet who makes these giant movies. And even if you're right, I can't listen to you. There's no credibility for this film.
Yeah, he just is.
Who's the German director that did Grizzly Man?
Oh, it's not Terrence Malick.
No. I'm the best at knowing sort of the information.
Wait, all you do is ask questions for Graham to Google.
I can't.
This is amazing. Who was that guy that
did that thing?
Werner Herzog.
Werner Herzog. Yeah. Okay, that's who I'm thinking of. That's the kind
now, did
of
he write for SNL?
No. Yeah, it's a. Did he make
I'm
Godzilla?
Find out that shit.
he made that movie with the with the submarine.
iPhone. I can Google myself.
God damn it.
But if you want to laugh, go and watch the Roland Emmerich trailer of
Anonymous.
Of Anonymous, and don't go see the movie.
Don't go see the movie. Go see Rum Diary and In Time and Puss in Boots.
More realistic Independence Day, his other movie.
That's right, he did Independence Day.
Do you guys remember a movie called Minus Man?
No,
yes.
I don't.
It was with Owen Wilson and Janine Garofalo. Was the top 40, or it was the 40 best trailer of all time. Yeah, guess who was in it?
Boom, nice. Eddie F. did Minus Man.
I was the trailer. I swear to God, I'm the trailer. And it was a funny thing. It was like the biggest thing I ever did. It played before the Blair Witch. It's like the Blair Witch episode. It was like the only thing I had done at the time. Like in
was
my
the
career,
trailer?
Was the trailer. Was the trailer. I'm so, I swear to God, they cast me in a trailer. They make this trailer. And
but you weren't in the movie?
I was not in the movie. It's the weirdest thing. It's a movie about a movie. And everyone kept calling me going, "You're the star of this big film." I'm like, I'm not in it. I'm not in it. And then I ran into Owen Wilson at the Comedy Cellar one night in New York City, and he was with someone I knew, and I said, "Hey, Owen." I said, "Hey, I'm the guy from the trailer for Minus Man." And he goes, "Ugh, more people saw you than me."
So go find that
is
trailer.
Is that when you punched him in the nose and that's why it's broken?
No, that was he was playing Marsha Brady and got hit with a football.
Well, that's our show, everybody. We want to thank our guest, Eddie Ift.
Thanks for having me, guys.
And where can we find you on the internet, Eddie?
Asking questions on Google about films I don't know about.
Now, you are or are not on iTunes at this point?
We are on iTunes right now, but it's better to go to www.jimandeddietalkshit.com.
Okay. Is that an asterisk or an I?
No, it was all written out. And there's a lot of pictures of men doing manginas on it. I don't know why.
Outstanding.
Yeah.
And then where can people like find you for tour dates?
Eddieift.com. EddieIfft.com. Don't Google me because it says I have AIDS.
You got Google bombed.
Chris, don't ever do that to me.
Don't worry.
It is kind of
I don't even know how to do it.
All right. Well, thank you.
Wait, let's do a Google bomb right here.
No.
Come on.
Well, no.
What no. Are we going to say? Oh, we got a lot to actually go over because we got a lot coming up.
We're not doing don't Google bomb us.
It's amazing.
It's amazing.
So we wanted to thank everybody, too, for supporting the story. You guys have been doing really, really appreciate a couple over $100 orders, and that really helps us out. Like we say, if you want to support the podcast, just spend $20 in the store a year. We really appreciate that. We're going to be adding a lot of new products up as well.
We're getting Patton Oswalt and Marc Maron CDs.
Yeah, those will be up momentarily. So, but actually, by the time this episode comes out, this should be up. So you can buy them as well. And also, we have some Comedy Central water bottles still. So if you buy those CDs, we'll throw a water bottle into.
So thanks a lot, you guys.
And the download films, too. We really appreciate you guys downloading the features.
It's very cool. So you can see me this week with Doug Benson, October 27th in Vancouver, the 28th at the Neptune Theater in Seattle, and the 29th at Punchline in San Francisco, and 30th at Punchline in Sacramento.
Wait, you're in Seattle on the 28th?
Yeah.
So am I.
Where yet?
I'm at the Comedy, what is it called? Comedy Underground?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm there 28th, 29th. So
sweet.
Where are you guys?
Just one night at the Neptune Theater.
All right, I'm going to come down and hang out.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Awesome, dude. That's we'll come awesome. See all of us hang out in Seattle.
Yeah, if you guys are there, go.
Check it out. And thanks again, you guys, for downloading my movie, Afghanistan. And all my tour dates and everything are on grahamelwood.com.
And we will be updating the calendar, too, so you can actually catch the tour dates at the Comedy Film Nerds calendar for everybody.
Like
that's in the works.
Yes, and like the Comedy Film Nerds fan page. Anything else, Chris?
Just usually I have my DVD, Myopic Visions, of all my short films that run HBO and the Sci-Fi Channel, and my book, Pacify Me, a Handbook for the Freaked Out New Dad. So thanks a lot for supporting that.
Yes.
And we got a lot of stuff coming up. And like we had teased it before, but we're also the Comedy Film Nerd's Guide to Movies. It's really coming along great. You guys are going to love it. It'll be out next year. And another teaser, we just signed up. Greg Proops is doing a chapter, too.
Yep. It's going to be a great book. Thanks again, Eddie Ift. I'm Graham Elwood.
I'm Chris Mancini. And as always, remember, Han shot first.